listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
During World War II, scientists from around the world came to the United States and collaborated on devising a nuclear weapon. While the success of the Manhattan Project is well known, few of us have any idea what happened to the materials that were used in building the American nuclear arsenal and the places where they have been stored. For the last year, the Wall Street Journal has been investigating what's happened to them since the end of the Cold War and how the matter of radioactive contamination has been dealt with. The first article in their Wasteland series is called A Forgotten Legacy of Nuclear Buildup. It appeared in the October 30th issue, and I'm very pleased that it brings lead reporter John R. Emshwiller to our show today. Hello.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Now, this series is the result of a year-long investigation. How did it begin?
Well,
somebody tell you they saw some nuclear waste sitting around somewhere?
Almost. We started looking actually at a site in Pennsylvania that had been active and very controversial. And in the course of looking at that particular location, we came across government records showing lists of literally hundreds of old sites that had done some kind of work for the federal nuclear program, mostly for the nuclear weapons program. And then we started thinking, well, gee, what's happened with those sites? And that sort of was the genesis.
And you start the piece by looking at the building on UC Berkeley's campus, your alma mater, where plutonium was first, is it discovered? Do you discover an
element? It was first discovered and isolated there. There is some naturally, tiny amounts of naturally occurring plutonium, but you generally get plutonium by bombarding uranium in a nuclear reactor. Glenn Seaborg and his colleagues at Berkeley, found a way to extract the small amounts of plutonium that existed and prove that it did what they thought it would do, would fission and be a fuel for a nuclear bomb. So that work, really sort of helped spark the Manhattan Project.
Were people aware that they needed a serious cleanup afterward?
There was always a certain awareness that, radiation could be dangerous. That went back to the 19th century, to uranium mining in Europe and, the Madame Curie and her husband. She died of radium poisoning when they discovered radium. But the amount of worry early on, from what we could tell, was relatively small on the safety front.
And a lot of the sites that you write about aren't necessarily obvious candidates for radiation contamination.
Now, one of the interesting things was the Manhattan Project was a huge, obviously, emergency project done during the Second World War, in which they recruited literally dozens and eventually hundreds of private companies to help out with this massive undertaking. Sort of set the stage then for the Cold War, which was even a more massive undertaking to create our entire nuclear arsenal.
We have posted a link on our show page to the database that you've created of the 500 sites that your research uncovered. First of all, how did you find them, and were you surprised that so many of them are in the Northeast and the Midwest, and especially in New York? New York is the place with the most sites.
Well, we found them through various government databases that have been made public over the decades. For many, many years, the nuclear weapons world was shrouded in secrecy. That began evaporating some in the 1980s and 90s, leaving open more public records, which we started sorting through at various agencies, Department of Energy, National Institutes of Occupational Health, and others, to compile this database with its information. As far as where they were located, at first it surprised me a bit, but you have to go back and think 70 years ago where the industrial base of America was. It was in places like New York and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Illinois, and so they went to the factories, that they were there in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
I would have assumed, of course, that it was in the Southwest and California. California was one of the major sites, but nothing like New York especially, or Ohio.
Right. We had universities. The University of California clearly was a big player in the early bomb work. As I think Los Alamos was built out there in New Mexico. The Hanford Reservation in eastern Washington. They partly built those because they wanted something remote.
What kinds of sites are they? Are they all research labs?
Many of them are factories, little machine shops. We came across one in Oxford, Ohio, that was literally a little, one-story kind of almost garage shop that did machining of uranium metal and was right in the middle of a residential neighborhood.
Now, there are 300 sites whose location you could pinpoint, but that means there are 200 others that may be anywhere?
Well, they have cities and states generally for where they are, but they don't have precise locations. And we tried to find as many precise addresses as we could going through old city directories and the like. But yes, they don't necessarily know after decades where exactly these places are.
And there's one uranium handling site that the Energy Department isn't sure which state it's in.
Right.
Were you able to figure out where Transcontinental Machine and Tool was located?
Well, we did find a 1941 newspaper article naming a Transcontinental Machine and Tool in New York City, but it didn't give us any more information than that. Has the same name. It could be. We think it's the same company, but we're not sure.
In New York City, do we know which borough?
No, it didn't say. And we're still trying to do some more research on that one just out of curiosity.
Well, considering the importance of this, you have to wonder why the Energy Department's record keeping has been so spotty.
Well, partly it's a matter of time. I think, you know, a lot of these small companies were hired to do specific jobs for a few years, and then they were dropped. They were moved on to other things. The energy, back then, the Atomic Energy Commission, their interest was building bombs. And, you know, they had some records, but they didn't keep complete records. And companies went out of business. They, you know, changed names. They changed locations. And they lost track.
Was the AEC or the Energy Department the only government agencies that have overseen these sites and the possible nuclear contamination?
No. The Atomic Energy Commission, you know, which in the 70s was split into what is now the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Department of Energy.
There's also the Army Corps of Engineers involved.
The Army Corps of Engineers got involved. The Environmental Protection Agency has gotten involved. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has gotten involved. Several state agencies get involved. I mean, there's a big cleanup going on right now in Queens that the EPA is doing.
My guest is John R. Emshwiller, who, with Jeremy Singervine, written the first in a series of articles under the total title Wastelands. This one is A Forgotten Legacy of Nuclear Buildup. It appeared in the October 30th issue of the Wall Street Journal. Was the secrecy that surrounded the Manhattan Project one of the reasons that better records weren't kept?
I think so. I mean, I think there was a focus early in the early decades on production of weapons. And so there was a great deal of secrecy around that. And things about keeping records of who got what doses of radiation, how much contamination might have been left behind at a site were considered less important things to worry about.
And do you think that people didn't realize just how dangerous radiation was? There are all those stories about the people who used to lick the points of the brushes when they did they did watches that glowed in the dark.
Oh yeah, and they used to remember when we were kids. They used to use X-ray your feet for shoes,
mm-hmm.
and they used to
Tom McCann
and put thyroid tests, you know, which eventually gave kids thyroid cancer. So I think there was that. There wasn't a full appreciation of the dangers of radiation, and those dangers have become more evident in recent decades as restrictions on exposure have tightened.
Do we have any idea of how big the health threat is at all of these sites?
It's very difficult to tell. I mean, the government has set out a whole complex set of standards for what it will allow to remain behind, because almost all these sites will have a little bit of contamination left. Some of it low enough the government thinks is safe. Some of it, though, in about 130 of the sites that we looked at, there have been or are being cleanups. So they've been deemed contaminated enough to need some kind of work.
Well, is most of what we know about this from the survivors of the bombs in Japan at the end of World War II? Have studies been done in the United States?
That has been the main cohort, they call it, the Japanese bomb survivors, of a long-term study of the effects of radiation, both fairly high level and low level. But there have been some studies of nuclear industry workers. There have been some studies of people who get a large amount of medical, you know, radiation. And most all of them point to, you know, we should – and they seem to have resulted in creating tighter standards, restrictive standards.
Well, could a private company have handled those nuclear materials and not have had more tight regulation, more tight oversight?
Well, yes. I mean, I think the Atomic Energy Commission, say back in the 40s and 50s, was passing out a lot of contracts, and they had a certain oversight machinery. But from what I can tell, it was, by today's standards, pretty loose and lax.
And this doesn't matter whether there was a Democrat or a Republican in the White House.
No, it seemed to be a pretty nonpartisan drive to build our nuclear weapons arsenal.
4 million people live within a mile of one of the 300 sites that you could pinpoint. How many people do you think are aware that they live close to a former nuclear site?
I would think, from what we could tell, it's not well known. Many of these sites, you know, have sort of disappeared in history. When we would call up and get hold of people who either own the site now or had occupied it, they would generally be shocked to find out that there had been a nuclear past to their location.
And that includes 260 public schools, 600 public parks within a half mile of some of these places?
Yeah, we were trying to get...
Some are in public parks.
Yes, there's a public park in California called Burris Park that has a old nuclear site where they actually buried strontium-90 as part of an experiment.
And then in Los Alamos, a dumping spot for uranium has been turned into a public hiking and recreation area.
Yeah, that's called Acid Canyon, not necessarily your most inviting name for a public hiking area, but that's what it's called.
So how dangerous would it be if I went hiking and camping in an area like that?
Well, you know, it's partly a matter of personal choice. You know, the government says we've cleaned it up. We found what we found, the contamination sites, and we've cleaned them up. But they do acknowledge that in a place like Acid Canyon, periodically the rains will uncover more contamination. How much radiation you might get from a day is probably fairly small.
But, you know, the half-life of these radioactive materials is very long. So it isn't like, okay, well, that was 50, 60 years ago. We shouldn't worry anymore.
No, I mean, the half-life, you know, of uranium was measured in the billions of years, plutonium in the hundreds of thousands of years. So, yes, these things will be around through our lifetime and many, many more lifetimes. And that's one of the ongoing challenges for the government. How do you deal with something so long-lived that goes well beyond the history of any civilization?
A caller wants to know if there was a component of the Manhattan Project in Union City, New Jersey. I have no idea why the listener wants to know about Union City in particular, but
I'd have to go back and look at our database. I know there's a number of sites in New Jersey, but among the 500 or so, I don't remember. Union City may have had one, but we'd have to look.
Well, I suspect that a lot of listeners are thinking, what about where I live in Long Island City Westchester?
They could go to our website, at WSJ.com, and I think they can get in without going through our paywall. I think they can get in and look at the database.
My guest is John R. M. Schwiller, who, with Jeremy Singer-Vine, has written piece called A Forgotten Legacy of Nuclear Buildup. It appeared in the October 30th issue of the Wall Street Journal. How many more articles do you expect to be publishing?
Oh, I'm hoping several more. I'm sure you know editors are editors, so we'll have to get them past my editors, but they seem interested in having a few more pieces.
Well, we will take a little break and come back with more. Stay with us. We are back with John R. M. Schwiller, lead writer, reporter, along with Jeremy Singer-Vine, of a series of articles on America's nuclear waste. The first one appeared in the October 30th issue of the Wall Street Journal called A Forgotten Legacy of Nuclear Buildup. Some nuclear sites have grabbed headlines throughout the years, including a federal complex that processed weapons-grade uranium in Fennell, Ohio, during the Cold War. One former Energy Department official described a tour of the facility in 1985 and seeing piles of uranium on the floor. Were they just lying there?
Apparently, there was not very good, you know, product control at that point. I think a lot of people back then looked at, you know, the uranium as a relatively benign, you know, substance, so they didn't have to worry quite so much. But as it turned out, the stuff is pretty radioactive, and it can be a health threat.
So what kind of radioactive contamination were authorities seeing when it was finally cleaned up?
Well, they've seen, health effects in workers, certainly at the plant, who have been getting compensated through a federal compensation program for nuclear weapons workers. There was also radioactive contamination found in well water of some residents off-site from stuff that blew out of the plant, through stacks and things. The government in the 1990s, I think it was, early 1990s, paid a $70 million to settle a lawsuit by residents.
And then the cleanup cost $4.4 billion.
Yes.
Why would this cleanup be that expensive?
Well, it was a big complex. It had several dozen buildings. It had, pretty heavy contamination in many of those buildings. And so, they have to handle it carefully, take it to special burial sites. And, we haven't looked back into how they all spent the whole $4.4 billion, but it does rack up.
Although that seems like chicken feed compared to what happened at Hanford, Washington, $150 billion.
That's the estimate. They're not going to finish that for decades. It is as far as cleanups go, it's the 8,000-pound gorilla.
And when John Glenn was senator from Ohio, pushing for the cleanup, he concluded that the Fernald plant was just the tip of the iceberg. Was he right?
Well, I think he was right. I think there were many, many more sites ranging in size from these little places, that we looked at in neighborhoods to the Hanfords of the world. And, now they're estimating that it cost up to $350 billion and maybe more to clean up the entire thing.
Well, the great physicist Niels Bohr said that in order to build a nuclear weapon, an entire country would have to transform itself into a factory. So the United States became that factory?
That's what Dr. Bohr later concluded when he saw the Manhattan Project. And as we know now, the Manhattan Project was really just a warm-up for the Cold War buildup of our nuclear capacity.
A listener, Joel in Westchester, left this comment on our show page. I was in a Columbia University student film quite a few years ago and was told offhandedly that the building that we used to film in was used for the Manhattan Project. It was on West 125th Street, west of the elevated subway for the number one train.
Yeah, I believe Columbia did some work for the Manhattan Project we had in our database, as a number of universities around the country did. NYU, I think, had some work. And as we say, Berkeley, University of Chicago, they were big in the Manhattan Project.
Mike from Pawling, New York, wonders about Nuclear Lake in Westchester, New York, where there was an isotope factory that caught on fire in the 70s. Had the contaminants been contained, as word had it?
I'd have to go back and look at the particular site. There have been several in trying to remember the Westchester site. I know there was one in Hicksville, New York, that produced some concerns about contamination getting off-site. But we'd have to go back and look at that particular one.
And another listener wonders why the cleanup in Hanford, Washington, it was so complicated that it would cost $150 billion.
It's a good question. In part, there's huge amounts of incredibly toxic material that they don't really have the technology at the moment to handle. So they're trying to design plants and technology as they go, which gets to be very expensive. And they also have something like 400 billion gallons of toxic liquid they dumped in the ground that's sort of now heading towards the Columbia River, I'm told, that they have to try to deal with. So it adds up.
Is all this contamination the result of military activity, or what about our nuclear power plants?
Well, that's a separate issue, which we didn't really look at yet in this series. We were looking mostly at the weapons program since it was our thought that, one of the signal events of the 20th century was the creation of nuclear weapons, and it changed our world.
And then the Cold War seemed to end all of that. Are we still building nuclear weapons?
We haven't built a new nuclear warhead, as I understand it, for years, but we still have obviously a nuclear arsenal and a fairly large nuclear, establishment. The number of warheads has been coming down with various treaties with the Soviet, or the old Soviets, now Russians. But we still have a, rather major nuclear, military force.
Now, the Manhattan Project is often pointed to as a paragon of the government's ability to organize and work toward a single goal. Why do you think that hasn't seemed to be true of the cleanup?
Well, I suppose, cleaning up is sometimes more difficult than building. You put more focus and resources in some ways into that. I think cleanup has become is a relatively late coming issue for the government, and it certainly doesn't have the glamour necessarily of sort of building weapons and winning wars.
Well, the Manhattan Project is cited as a perfect example of doing things right. In fact, it was cited when all the problems happened with healthcare.gov, that website. If we could build a nuclear weapon, why can't we just put up a simple website?
Well, I mean, I don't know the complete history of the Manhattan Project, but there were certainly glitches. You know, they spent a huge amount of money. For $2 billion in the 1940s was a serious chunk of change, and they made, from what I could tell, a lot of mistakes, but they made enough things right that they got their end product wanted. They got a bomb they could drop on the enemy.
Now, I'm wondering whether the Manhattan Project wasn't called that because so many of the sites are in Manhattan. In the 40s, they stored some 300,000 pounds of uranium in a warehouse that's just that's on the 500 block of West 20th Street.
Yeah, right near the High Line now.
Federal inspectors in the 1980s found contamination there. 50 drums of material were removed. Do we know what the situation is like now?
Well, the last radiation checks of those places were done in the early 1990s after the cleanup, and they found that they met all then-current radiation standards, protection standards. I don't think anything's been done since, but, as far as we know from the last government check, it was okay.
Well, I'm never reassured when I hear that something meets government radiation standards.
Well, again, that's a different, each of us has to decide that. And, government radiation standards have gotten tighter over the years. But, in the absence of, something to the contrary, all I can say is that, they were deemed fit for unrestricted use.
My guest is John R. Emshwiller, who is the lead reporter on an article in the Wall Street Journal called A Forgotten Legacy of Nuclear Buildup, subtitled At Hundreds of Sites, U.S. Grapples with Forgotten Legacy of Its Nuclear Buildup. It was in the October 30th issue of the Wall Street Journal, and it is the first of a series of articles. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. A listener wonders, should we take a Geiger counter with us when we go on the High Line?
I think the High Line, as far as I know, should be okay.
Doug from Westchester wants to know if the Obama administration is raising the safe level of radiation through the EPA, and is that connected to the fallout from the Fukushima nuclear disaster?
Well, there is a controversy going on, which we didn't get to in the story, and I haven't done a lot of reporting on, about what the allowable exposure would be after, say, a nuclear accident in the United States, either a meltdown of a reactor or a nuclear dirty bomb. And that's generated a lot of controversy about whether the government is allowing standards on those kind of emergencies that are too high.
You write about a site in Staten Island where 1,200 tons of uranium ore had been stored in the early 1940s. Why wasn't that site originally slated for cleanup?
Well, it's got an interesting history. It was a Belgian businessman actually got this stuff, very, very valuable ore at the time, to the United States to keep it from the Nazis. But it was privately owned when it was on the island, and the government program that looked at the cleanup is basically said, well, since it was privately owned for most of the time, it doesn't come under a government cleanup because, well, it was eventually sold to the Manhattan Project. We don't cover things that were privately owned like that, that the government didn't order, delivered.
Let it sit there and threaten the lives of anyone who lives in the area?
Well, the uranium was eventually sold to the Manhattan Project, so what was left behind was a residue of radiation. And the government, in its wisdom, decided in the 1980s that it wasn't not our problem. We'll send it over to other agencies in the state of New York, which I guess sat on it for a while. And then finally they got back to the Department of Energy a few years ago, some 30 years later, 25 years later, and said, well, can you look at it again? And now the Department of Energy and the Army Corps of Engineers is looking at putting it into that very program they rejected it from and saying, yeah, maybe we should clean it up.
What's there now?
Well, we visited there. There's a couple of businesses. One's an auto towing business. One is a asphalt business. So they have workers on site some. It is, fortunately, they're in a relatively remote corner of the site. But one government document we saw estimated that the potential exposure of somebody who was over at that corner for a while could be well above what are current acceptable standards of radiation exposure.
And there were businesses I'm sure there were people who were in those businesses every day.
Yeah, there are people in businesses like every day. And, the business obviously have changed over the decades on Staten Island there. And so it'd be you'd have to go back and trace who was there and how much time they spent where.
Have the cleanup budgets been affected by sequestration?
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers budget for about two dozen of these cleanups has gone down fairly substantially in the last couple of years. It had been running at about $140 million a year. It's now down to about $100 million a year. I think it's all part of the general belt tightening. It's a little unclear how much sequestration hit that or how much that was just voluntarily lowered by the Office of Management and Budget.
Well, has the smaller cleanup budget meant that even sites that are identified as being potential health hazards aren't getting remediated?
Well, what it probably means is that schedules will have to slow down, that things that might have been done this year will have to be pushed back to next year and et cetera, et cetera. Because, just generally, if you have less money, you have less, resources to tackle things quickly.
Well, you write about one site in Queens where they've erected a fence and some new flooring in businesses on site in the interim.
Yeah. Queens is an interesting problem. It was, again, identified as being pretty radioactive 30 years ago, roughly. And so it just sort of left there because they thought at that time, standards were higher. We don't have to do this. But people have been living and working there all this time. And now the numbers they give of potential exposure are pretty high. They're not really solving the problem. They're just remediating it temporarily by putting, a sandwich of lead and steel down over the sidewalk. But to get the radiation, which is up to 20 feet down, they'd have to dig up the street and the sewers and take all that out.
Well, putting a fence around it isn't really going to help that much. Radiation does move, doesn't it?
Yeah, this particular empty field, there was some, it was an abandoned lot right next to this block. And it had like some boats in it and a homeless guy living there. And they're trying to keep people out from living there. But yeah, I mean, in order to get rid of the radiation, they'd have to start digging, and sometimes digging pretty deep.
In about 50 cleanups, they've imposed, quote, institutional controls. What does that mean?
Well, that means that even after they do a cleanup, there's sometimes residual contamination left behind. And there's enough in some cases that they have to restrict how you use it. So there's a place in Ohio called the Mound Facility that was cleaned up, but it has enough residual radioactive materials in the soil that they decided they can't let nursery schools there or elementary schools there or housing, because they don't want children to be exposed to the site, because children tend to be about twice as sensitive to radiation as adult males.
Well, we've seen in places like Love Canal serious birth defects from people who have lived on contaminated sites. In those cases, it had nothing to do with radiation, but it was still toxic. Are we seeing similar things in some of these places?
Well, certainly some people believe that there are, higher incidence of cancer in some of these locations from people who lived near the sites and maybe got exposed to radiation from the operations of the sites. It's a controversial area. People have sued companies over this. Some have won, settlements. So it's an ongoing debate. But yes, there are many people who believe that, these sites have caused cancer among, some parts of the population. And, it's still an open question. A lot of people, disagree with that.
Now, can you tell us about the Wastelands database? That is not run by the Wall Street Journal.
Well, it was put together by the Wall Street Journal, and it's on our website. So I guess it is sort of run by the Wall Street Journal.
And you can access it by going to our website at WNYC.org. We have a link to it. This is the first part of a series. What's coming up in the next part?
I can't talk about that yet, but we're going to be looking more at this area. I mean, and this whole issue of the legacy of the weapons program in America.
Actually, I think what I was trying to say earlier was that this is not behind the paywall.
Right.
Which is important.
That's what I
understand. So if people want to access it, they don't have to worry about going through the usual Wall Street Journal paywall.
I think that's right.
Because this is such an important topic.
Yeah, I think we do put some things outside the paywall.
And I thank you so much for being with us, John R. M. Schwiller, who with Jeremy Singer Vine is responsible for a large article, 2.5 pages of the Wall Street Journal. It's a lot of space. Under the headline, A Forgotten Legacy of Nuclear Buildup. It's part of a Wasteland series. Thank you so much for being on our show.
That's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.